Welcome to another episode of Badass Banking, and today I'm with one of the original badass. I guess you're a badass banker, right, Ron? Shevlin.
Badass analyst.
Badass analyst. Just badass. I mean, so Ron, how you been? How's COVID treating you?
What? COVID?
Yeah.
No difference here. I'm at home, working from home. It's what I've been doing for 8 years. No difference, except, you know, my wife and I figured out yesterday that this is probably the longest stretch of time in past 30 years that I haven't been on a plane. So
I'm right there with
you about that, but it's getting itchy, ready to go do something, go to a conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a call with Brett King yesterday and some of his team, and he was saying the same thing. His last flight was March 26th. I think mine was right around the same time. And we're getting to the point that we actually miss it. I don't miss sitting around in airports, especially the American Express lounge, which I think are COVID central, but we do miss the activity and obviously seeing people face to face. And now we're doing this and it feels like natural, which is weird, you know?
Yeah.
So what's
I've always said, Brian, that I hate the getting there, but I love the being there. Yeah. So, you know, that's never liked the travel part, but always like to beat the getting there part.
No, I hear you. I definitely agree with you. So a couple of topics for us, and you know, you and I talked before. First of all, at some point you're going to show us the t-shirt you're wearing because, you know, we know that you're sucking up the bread on this one. There's no doubt about it. It's a great shirt. Anyway, let's talk for a second about my favorite topic and your favorite topic. Google checking.
Google checking.
What? First of all, what the hell is it?
Your guess is as good as mine and pretty much as good as anybody's. You know, when they first announced this last, I think it was November, and they announced that they were going to do this, they offered zero insight into what it was. This round, you know, was about a week ago or so, they announced six new partners. There's a credit union in there, a couple of community banks, a couple of large banks, and a digital bank, Bank Mobile. And again, very sketchy on the details. I reached out to four out of the six companies and heard back from four of them. And basically I asked Brian, I said, you know, have you seen the product? Have you seen a demo? If you've not seen a demo, what are they telling you about it? And why it's going to be better than what everything else that's out there. It was as if they were all reading from the same script. Right. At this time, we cannot share more details, blah, 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 you know. We are working with Google to create the best user experience, blah, 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 blah. And I really got the impression that they've never actually seen anything. Nobody would share anything. Now, sure, there might be some kind of NDAs and stuff, but most, you know, even if they had an NDA, they share something that, well, we've seen it and it looks great, but we can't share anything. But that's not what they said. They said, you know, it was as if they were reading from a script. So I think that they haven't really seen anything, tell you the truth. And I think they're kind of going on faith. And I think the only thing that we kind of know is that it sounds like it will be kind of integrated into Google Pay.
Right.
So it's not really like you're going to your bank's website or you're going to the bank's mobile app to do banking. It's not clear to me how prominent the partner actually is going to be in this user experience.
Yeah, no, I agree. It sounds like a payment play to me. I know that they're going to have a debit card. They've talked a little about that. So far, they haven't announced they're going to have any kind of rewards or points with it. I assume they will at some point, probably tied to the Android ecosystem. You know, the big difference between Apple Pay and them, obviously, is Apple Pay is a credit card, you know, powered by
Apple Card. Yeah, no,
yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of plays out. I'm trying to determine who it appeals to other than those that are embedded in the Android ecosystem. You know,
from a consumer perspective?
Yeah, from a demographic point of view, I'm not so sure I understand who their true demographic is.
I can tell you that because just did in the beginning of July, I field a consumer survey for something else I'm working on. And I threw in a question into the survey. I said, if any of these providers, these non-financial institution providers, were to offer a checking account, what would you be likely to do? And one of those providers was Google. Now, I didn't just ask, you know, would you open the account? My prompts were, I would open the account and close out my existing primary account, you know, in effect, making the new account their primary account. The second option was, I would open the account, but keep my, you know, put some money in, but keep my primary account open, in effect, making it their secondary account. Excuse me. And then asked, you know, prompted for, well, you know, I wouldn't do anything right now, but might consider it. And then the last answer was, you know, would never give it a second thought. You know, we'll never do this. So not only are you correct in that it appeals to those who already have an Android device, but even more specifically, it really appeals to those who are already using Google Pay, which makes sense. But what's interesting, I think, is the split in the numbers between those who would said that they would make it their primary account and those who said that they'd make it a secondary account. You know, overall, it was a pretty healthy number. It was almost, you know, roughly a quarter of respondents said, yeah, we'd open an account. 11% saying would make it their primary, 16% saying make it their secondary. And having said all that, let's put some, you know, reality and caveat here. And I've said this for years. If there's anything I've learned from doing consumer research in the past 20 years is that, boy, do consumers lie when they take surveys.
Yeah.
And I don't really mean, I'm jokingly, you know, joking. It's not they're lying, but they're tending to overstate what their actual behavior will be, especially in a particular time frame. And honestly, I would cut those numbers by anywhere from 3 to 5, you know. So, you know, 5 to 9% would do it within the first year. And again, that's like 2% making it their primary account and 4 or 5 opening up as a secondary account. So, you know, it'll take a while before 27% of the population. Basically, Brian, if they had 27% market share, they'd have more customers than Bank of America, you know.
Yep.
And maybe that'll happen someday, but that'll easily take some time. And it is unlikely because of the, you know, the Android iOS split. Last numbers I saw, Android only had 40% of the U.S. market. So, there's some limitations on this.
Yep. No, I get it. You know, one of the things that concerns me, I guess, well, I shouldn't say concerns me, but it kind of makes me think twice. You know, Google's got an amazing rate of abandonment when it comes to product. You know, right now, just the other day, I think it was Friday, maybe it was Sunday, they announced they're going to fold Duo, which is their, you know, their video chat, into Google Meet. Which I guess makes sense. Why do you need both, right? Although I think Google Meet was probably originally intended to be more enterprise. And I just think of all the other products, the Hangouts, et cetera, that they've, you know, had and then dissolved. Now, I like the fact that they're nimble. I like the fact that they're creative. And maybe when they don't see the level of adoption they like, they give up or morph it into something else. But this really makes me wonder. I don't view it as another Apple play, right? What Apple has done. I think what Apple has done with Goldman is incredible. I mean, I think they're the force to be reckoned with right now, in my opinion. Which takes me to the next subject. Let's talk about
challenge. Wait, before you leave the next subject, let's talk about that, because you're spot on that they do have a record of, you know, abandoning stuff when it doesn't succeed to the level that they want it to. But I think there's a couple things that differentiate this one, Brian. First of all, you know, for the past couple of months, and I've written about this too, you know, I'm very much convinced that Google wants to become not a bank, but a vendor to banks.
Right.
And, you know, you see it, what I mean, basically doing what, you know, through a partnership is, yeah, they can call it a partnership. It's probably somewhat of a vendor relationship. You know, they also announced not long ago that they had an AI-based tool to help banks with their PPP loan processing. Yep. And they're obviously making a really big push and gaining traction over in Europe with their Google Cloud offering. And so I think there's a different kind of a mindset and approach from an organizational perspective here. They know that in the enterprise market, and specifically in the, you know, the financial services market, you can't just throw some stuff against the wall. I almost said something that your sensors might have bleeped. You know,
I don't have sensors. That's why I don't have an employer anymore. I have no sensors.
Oh, I thought there were other reasons why you were unemployed. But anyway, you know, so they just throw stuff against the wall. I don't think they can do that in this market. And I think they kind of understand that. And they've got a different approach and strategy here. So I think that's that's what's really kind of different about this is that, you know, in the consumer market, yeah, you can throw stuff against the wall. If it doesn't work, kill it. You know, in the enterprise market, you know, you can't do that. And you're going to get, you know, some really nervous customers if they start seeing, you know, oh, well, we tried something, it doesn't work. And yeah, here we go. You know, once you commit to their cloud offering, you can't a year from now have them come back and go, yeah, didn't work, we're out, you know.
Yeah, doesn't work that way. That makes a lot of sense, which takes me to the next subject, which is challenger banks. So should bankers be worried about the challenger banks?
Depends. Yeah, yes and no. Depends which bankers we're talking about. And here's why I do think, especially community banks and credit unions do need to be worried about the challenger banks. You know, again, going back to some of the research I recently did, I asked consumers who their primary bank was and if they had a second, you know, more than one account, how many accounts did they have and who did they consider to be their secondary account? So I think there's, you know, some things that are going on here that I don't think a lot of bankers are truly on top of. You know, I think a lot of bank executives are close to my age, you know, baby boomer. You know, and Brian, you're close to it too. You know, we got out of school, we picked a bank and we got a checking account. Maybe we switched a couple of times, but you know, basically we had one bank account. If we had more than one, it was because we were responding to an offer for something that required us to open up another bank account. We put no money in it. We never used it. And maybe at some point we woke up and, you know, realized we have this account. And we closed it out. Consumer behavior has changed significantly. Millennials in particular, and even a lot of Gen Xers, have more than one bank account, one checking account, not because they're, you know, responding to some offer, but because it's how they manage their money.
Yep, yep.
They are looking for better interest rates. This is why they put money into a Marcus account. They're looking for better PFM tools. They're looking, oh, and by the way, we'll talk about this, I hope. When I say better PFM tools, I don't mean budgeting and expense categorization. I mean actionable things that, you know, move money and optimize their financial lives. Good. Or they're looking for, you know, debit card rewards and things like that, as you alluded to. So, you know, there's a lot of people who have more than one account because that's how they want to manage their financial lives. And so the challenge with the challenger banks is that you're a community, first of all, we got to really separate the community banks from the credit unions too. Mm-hmm. The community banks are really getting hit hard with the drop in the percentage of consumers who consider them their primary account. The credit union's holding their own a little bit better on that front. But reality is that having primary account status ain't what it used to be.
Yep.
Primary account tends to be more associated with direct deposit versus my relationship. Right. So in other words, the bank accounts are becoming, as I said this before, you know, paycheck motels, temporary yep. places for people's money to stay before it moves on. And, you know, the consumer data that I've got most recently really kind of plays that out, is that consumers are, you know, more than, you know, about a third of consumers have more than one account. And so the challenge or the threat of the challenger banks to community banks and credit unions in particular is not that they will steal primary status, but that they're going to start chipping away at the relationship. And start offering things. You know, I've never particularly been a big fan of Chime's long-term prospects, and I've always believed that they've way overstated their numbers. But look, I got to give them credit. The reality is that there's a measurable percentage of consumers now who say that they're going to Chime because of early access to the paycheck. It's yep. features like that are drawing them. So it's this chipping away. And the other reason that I really think the community banks and credit unions need to worry is, you know, look, the top three banks, the three largest banks, Bank of America, Chase, and Wells, hold about 40 to 45% of the millennial market, a little bit less of the Gen X market. Interestingly, Gen Zers, not as much. So there's some opportunity there. But the reality for a lot of these mid-sized banks, and even going up to the large regionals, is, you know, they're going to have to start identifying what I'm beginning to think of as their tribe. And I give a little
Stessa Cohen. Yeah. So I like the tribe concept too.
Yeah. Yeah, she wrote something about that recently, and that struck in my head. It's like, you know, the community banks have got to recognize that, you know, their community is no longer geographically based, but it's tribal based, and they're going to have to start picking out. Now, you've got, you know, a number of challenger banks who are really starting to understand that. Aspiration is a great example of that. You know, going after consumers who have that social awareness and want to do banks, you know, business with a company, don't even call it a bank, that, you know, has those values. You know, credit unions for years have said, oh yeah, we attract people who want, you know, cooperative. Well, that's true, but it's a really small percentage of people who want that. And so, you know, you're going to find the aspirations kind of chipping away at the community bank and credit unions, you know, base of members and customers. And that's why I think it is a threat. You know, the numbers don't show it today, but over the next 5 to 10 years, that they are going to continue to chip away at that.
Well, I mean, you described me, you know, and I'm a boomer. I'm going to be 59 in November. I do some experimenting, not only because of the industry I'm in, but I think of different products and services specifically for different needs. I very much use kind of a bucket methodology in how I manage my money. We'll say that there's some play money, then there's some living expense money. That's where my bank is my utility in essence. In the past, it was my direct deposit provider when I worked for GZO and Strategy Corp. It all went in there. That relationship's gone. And slowly but surely, those balances are decreasing. Then I have a backup bank, which is Chesapeake here in the local market. I wanted to have a very hyper-local bank that I had a relationship with. My wife's a realtor, so she has to have a relationship with individuals for the purpose of referrals. And then I've got, you know, Capital One, because I earn more on my cash there. I still want to keep some cash. My tax frees are all at a Raymond James. The bulk of my investment, we'll call it wealth, is at Raymond James. And then I've got a couple of fintech apps, which I'm using for a variety of different reasons as well. I'm kind of partitioning my money. I don't think the average consumer, when you and I ask the question, or a research director asks the question, who is your primary bank? I don't think the consumer necessarily understands the definition, maybe nor do we, of what primary is. And to your point, I think it goes back to that direct deposit relationship, not necessarily who I depend on, but, you know, simply how I use them. So it's a, you know, I don't know who my primary bank is. I can't really give you that answer. It used to be Atlantic Union because my direct deposit went there. Now I don't, although I sweep money in from Raymond James, right, on a regular basis. So wherever I sweep that to will probably become my primary. But that's just my primary bank, not my primary financial institution.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting. So you mentioned PFM before. Obviously, PFM is near and dear to me. Brett King and I yesterday were chatting with Cash's CEO. We're also talking with somebody that we're considering working with. He brought up the issue of budgets, right? And when we think of PFM traditionally, it was a budgeting tool. There's nothing sexy or appealing about budgeting. Nobody wants to do it. People hate it. PFM is no longer really a budget thing. To me, it's more about the insights related to cash flow, predicting what is needed down road and helping you, the consumer, make the decisions you need to make in order to, you know, be financially savvy in essence. It's about true financial wellness, short-term and long-term. Budgets don't work. That's what we have found. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really hate to disagree with you, but I disagree with you. And here's why.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, listen, if I had agreed with you, I wouldn't have disagreed just for the sake of disagreeing, even though that would have been fun just to have the argument. But here's what I'll put my stake in the ground is that, yeah, budgeting, you know, no payback for the amount of effort that it takes, you know, somebody to do that kind of thing. Always joke that, you know, budgeting and to some extent PFM as a whole is kind of like the New Year's resolution. You know, every New Year's comes around, you're going to quit smoking, get in shape, and get your finances in order. Yep. And by February, you stop going to the gym. And by March, you stop using Mint or PFM, whatever it was. But even what you're talking about in terms of sort of the insights, I think the challenge and problem for a lot of people, Brian, is that the impact does not happen simply from providing them with information or insights. You have to really have an impact on wellness or financial health, or even, you know, to me, it's a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, the low end of the spectrum, it is about financial health and wellness. But at some point, it just kind of morphs into performance, return, performance.
Yep.
And, you know, at some point, it's about behavioral change. And so, you know, as I alluded to before, I think consumers do want PFM, but they certainly don't want another damn budgeting tool.
Right.
Don't think they want another expense categorization tool. I don't care how good you are at the expense categorization. And I don't even think that they want more information about cash flow. Look, intuitively, you know, I used to joke is, you know, the remember the old Finovate demos for PFM, and the presenter would get up there and show how they have this great, you know, voice first thing. Hey, PFM tool, can I afford to go out on Friday night? Well, Brian, you have, here is my take is if you have to ask your PFM tool if you can go out on Friday night, the answer is no, you can't go. And so what consumers want and need is two things, or maybe more than two things, but at a minimum, mechanisms to help them change their behavior, to get over their bad spending behaviors or bad savings behavior, you know, whether it's through incentives or if it's just simply doing it. That's why, you know, tools like DigitGrade, just do it. Don't make me have to do anything. You go do it. So it's that actionable and it's that behavioral change that's important here. And I think we're beginning to see tools that do that. You know, I give Brett and Movin a lot of credit. You know, they were one of the first to really kind of address that. Mo Khalid, when he was working there coming out of Citi, you know, he's taken a lot of that to Commonwealth Bank of Australia now. You know, they were kind of on the forefront of, you know, recognizing that this was a behavioral problem, not an informational problem.
And he's building on that continually. He's actually now tying it to some of the stuff that's going on with COVID, which is pretty interesting. So yeah, he would agree 120% with everything you're saying right now.
He better. Or I also have that argument with him too. So, you know.
Well, you're wearing his shirt, so.
Okay, time to show, yeah.
Time to show the shirt.
Here we go. Let's see, can we get this done here? Trust me, this is all I'm taking off.
This is the Ron Show.
Here we go. Breaking banks.
There you go.
My ad, making my money for the day. Brett, you owe me 17 cents for that.
17. I think it's up to 18 cents now. Well, you know, I mean, fundamentally, I think.
Per view.
Oh, it's per a per. This is
of the, yeah, for every person who views this, you know, I won't guess how many numbers, you know, there. I guess it'll be in the thousands. So I'll make some money on that.
That's right. Shevlin engine optimization, I call it. That's your SEO play. Well, listen, Ron, it's been, it's always a pleasure, obviously. And I didn't mention at the beginning of the show who you really are, that you're the managing director of FinTech research at Cornerstone. So I apologize for that, but I think everyone knows who the hell you are. And if they
don't forget FinTech Snark Tank blog on Forbes. Everybody go read that.
There's that SEO plug again, you know, and I'm going to put a link to that below because that's what we do on YouTube. So anyway, Ron, it's been a pleasure. For those of you watching, please like, subscribe, dislike, comment, positive, negative. I don't give a crap. This is all about engagement and collaboration. This is a collaborative space. This whole world of FinTech and FinServe are colliding, and in colliding, it is better for the customer. Ron, last words. You're the man. I appreciate it. What do you have to say?
Thanks for having me on. Love badass banking.